Welcome to the Security Sessions podcast, brought to you by Thales and hosted by me, Nera Jones. In this podcast series, we'll be discussing the technologies, people, and processes behind information security and delving into topics like data security, remote access, and digital transformation. We'll be speaking to Thales and industry experts to bring you fresh perspectives on how to navigate the world of cloud security. Today, I'm very excited to introduce this new episode on the future of payments. The payments ecosystem has evolved tremendously over the past few years, but especially in the last two, where we have seen a surge in adoption of all kinds of digital payments. This raises a few questions. Where will digital payment technology take us in the future? How does this affect retailers and financial services organizations? And what risks will we be facing? It is my pleasure today to introduce two fantastic guests, Simon Keats, Head of Strategy Payment Security at Thales, and Scott Abrahams, SVP Business Development and FinTech at Mastercard. Simon and Scott, welcome to you both. I'm delighted to have you here on this podcast. And without further ado, let's jump into the questions. So, Scott, you have a lot of experience in retail and, of course, in payments at Mastercard. And by all accounts, you're a man of global vision. So what new payment trends are you seeing and how are these varying across the globe?
Well, thank you, Nir. I don't know whether I quite describe myself that way, but thank you. I appreciate it. Look, I think, you know, many people have said many things about the impact of the pandemic on consumer habits, not just in terms of payments, just, you know, in every way of life. And we wouldn't want it this way, but there's been such an incredibly accelerated adoption of digital payments over the past 18 months to 2 years. And we think about 30 to 40% of that change will actually be permanent and will stick. At the very start of the pandemic, from a UK perspective, so sort of March, April, May time, we saw about 5 years worth of growth in digital payments in just 3 months. So, you know, either because people thought, I want to do it this way now, I'm worried about cash, I don't want to be, you know, in contact with people, or genuinely out of a sense of necessity at getting things sort of, you know, delivered to your home, we saw a huge adoption. And of course, and most people, and you know, I think we'll feel this in our own lives, and particularly the UK consumer, most changes in behavior stick if the first, second, and third experience of that behavior is, you know, is really positive.
Excellent. So what are the major challenges retailers and other financial services organizations are facing as a result from your side, Simon?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Nira. And just, I mean, to reflect on what Scott said, you know, even just from a personal point of view, how my spending habits have changed. And, you know, obviously everything a lot more for me is done online these days than in store. I certainly don't think I've used an ATM in the last 18 months. And, you know, the impact of that then on what that means to retailers and organizations, I think, is just that rapidness of change has been very difficult to keep up with. You know, changing processes within the organization, making sure that when they're now shifting to an e-commerce world, for example, that they have all of the right processes, procedures, the right rigor in place to ensure that they're acting securely and in accordance with the rules. And the thing that I think goes along with digitization is the adoption of new technology, of course. A massive shift to the cloud that we've certainly seen with organizations that I think that we didn't expect to be in this place when we started last year. You know, we still thought there was quite a long tail until organizations started moving some of these very sensitive workloads into the cloud. And so I think, you know, the challenges, as I said, are about making sure that you maintain process, maintain control, and stick to the rules. And as you start moving into these new areas, for example, accepting online card payments, how do you make sure that data is secure? And this in itself comes with a whole range of challenges. Not just how do I use this new technology, but where does my data exist? How do I make sure that it's secure and only accessible to the right people at the right times, and not subject to an attack by criminals.
These are very good points, Simon. Staying in control, remaining secure, indeed very challenging, especially as a result of this accelerated digitization. We've observed also a massive extension of the digital supply chain as a result. So from your side, Scott, what are you seeing the challenges to be?
Well, I think it's interesting in terms of, you know, where I would come from this, you know, answering that question. And Simon, I'm with Simon in terms of all of the problem issues, if you like, in terms of data and fraud and all those things. What's much more upfront and front of mind for many of our customers is making sure that when a customer turns up at their website, they take the transaction, right? People don't abandon and go somewhere else. And that is related partly to how you serve them online, and of course also importantly how you serve them offline as well. And so all of our customers, I would say, across the globe knew that digitally engaging with their customers was important. I think the vast majority now see it as you know, success defining, I would say, more than just important. And not only is that from a security and safety perspective, it's in terms of survival of your business. So that really is key. What I also think is very interesting, I mean, I work with a huge number of large banks across the world, both what I would call, what are called incumbent banks and also challenger banks. And the way some of those challenger banks were able to flex so quickly to serve their customers in new ways, you know, you can open accounts online without any contact, et cetera, has led to a situation where the competitive landscape has shifted under people's feet within days. I look at the way different banks cope with chargebacks, for instance, as every flight in the world got cancelled, for instance, and all of these things that were competitively nice to have became competitively key to have. And I think that's been a huge change, Neera.
Absolutely. So in terms of challenges for retailer and financial services or organizations sort of globally, if we stay for that topic on that topic a little bit more, what are you observing in terms of how these challenges are trying to be addressed and looking at digital identity and authentication? I know MasterCard has been very active in that space, indeed as have Thales been. So Scott, if you continue on that theme perhaps, and then I'll move on to Simon in a second.
You know, if you take what a card network does around the world, it does three things, right? It authorizes transactions, it clears transactions so everybody knows where they stand, and then it settles transactions, money changes hands, basically. What we're seeing, particularly in Europe, both from a customer demand perspective, from a regulatory perspective, and from a general safety and security perspective, there's another piece to that now, which is at the start, is authorization and authentication. And that is a huge shift for payments. So, you know, from a regulatory perspective, you know, two-factor authentication has to be in place, you know, across the EU at different times over the coming months. But actually, I think it's interesting to see potentially how quickly we would have got there with that type of demand anyway, particularly as, you know, it's so important these days, and particularly we've welcomed, for want of a better word, so many new digital customers to the ways of transacting with a company like MasterCard digitally, whether it's using our cards contactlessly, whether it's using digital mobile wallets, whether it's using new checkout tools, whether it's using different pays online. You know, all of those need to work well out of the box first time for new consumers, else you lose them to something else. And that, I think, is the real digital battleground these days. So when that comes to retailers, how easily you do that whilst not losing any transactions is, I think, the defining challenge for retailers operating online. And it's one that we're seeing, you know, that they're looking to the likes of ourselves and others, and I'm sure Thales as well, to help them provide a best-in-class service so they don't lose customers at that checkout experience, because there's so many different options and different ways of paying as well.
Absolutely. And what's your take on this, Simon?
I completely agree, Neera. I think it's that last point by Scott of the range of different payment methods and, you know, just I think leading to an amount of confusion and too much choice at times often leaves customers in a state where they aren't able to necessarily know what the right thing to do is. I saw a screenshot on LinkedIn, I guess, a couple of days ago of all of the different payment mechanisms supported on a particular website. And, you know, in the old days, in the before times, you had checkout with your card, you know, Visa and MasterCard and American Express and Diners and a handful of others. Whereas now I've also got the alternative methods like PayPal, and now I've got different ways of checking out where I can spread my cost across a number of months. And, you know, it's that NASCAR problem where when we were signing into websites a few years ago, you could sign in with Google and Facebook and Twitter and then 100 others. You end up with all of these logos, and as I said, I think just leading to confusion. But I guess, you know, dealing with that from a retailer's point of view is thinking about how you adapt and at the same time as meeting all of your customers' expectations and having that seamless journey of not introducing too much friction, how do I balance the risk on the other side of that? And so obviously as Thales, we're coming at this from a security and risk point of view and really working with customers, retailers, and banks to understand how technology can play a role in helping with the minimization of risk. You know, we talk about encryption a lot as a mechanism for really helping with that. How can I de-scope my environment and ensure that I don't have sensitive information lying around that is vulnerable and potential for an attack by criminal? So I think the thing that we're really seeing with retailers, with organizations is as they've moved into this digital space, it's helping them understand what that risk is and really what controls and mitigations they can put in place with a means or an attempt really to not interfere on the customer side of things. And, you know, I think probably one of the best examples of this has been tokenization, either on the mobile side through card payment digitization, and also on the back end side at merchants where they're tokenizing card sensitive card information. All of that really happens seamlessly. So when I tap my phone in store, I don't realize that that's a token, but I'm well protected as a customer. And then the same as when I enter my card details online, I don't realize this is happening at the back end, but all of my really sensitive information is tokenized, it's protected, so that if that retailer is compromised, my personal data isn't. And I think that's really been great. I haven't been impacted as a customer, but all of that security exists.
And I think just coming in on that, Neera, there's a couple of things I'd say. But one, I think that whole thing, and perhaps I should have mentioned that before tokenization, the one thing we do need to get a bit better at as a cards industry is helping our customers understand that we're doing that, because it does give a huge amount of comfort, I would say, to people that, you know, a lot of the time, you know, their actual data isn't actually hanging around anywhere, right? It's a link to a piece of data that only certain businesses like ourselves know. And just the other thing I wanted to say, Simon made a great point at the start of what he was saying there. I remember a few years ago, that checkout page space, if you like, was at a premium, right? It was very hard to persuade a retailer to take a new form of payment. That's changed massively. And I think that is also perhaps somewhat down to pandemic as well. No retailer wants to turn anybody away because they've only got this form of payment or that form of payment. And that's made a huge change, because as you say, there's such a smorgasbord of different ways of paying a customer, of paying a company, I should say, online for something these days, and how often you pay and how long you pay it off for, etc. So I think that's something that's had a real tangible impact on digital payments in the last 18 to 24 months.
And in fact, from what you both just said, I know we've been talking about the challenges facing retailers. They're going to be even more challenged in the next few months, because, of course, we have the holiday season coming up. It's going to be a very busy retail season, and before even Christmas and other celebration, we'll have all sorts of darkly colored days where people go absolutely frantic trying to find the best possible deal. So in this context, do you have some tips for consumers? Because I know you just mentioned consumers, Scott, in terms of communication and making them aware of how they can protect themselves, but also how they are already protected as well.
First of all, Neera, it's going to be such a challenging seasonal period for many retailers. You know, we know, don't we, that, you know, the vast majority of many retailers' sales happen at the sort of last quarter, even the last month of the year. And I think there's a number of, I mean, having worked for Sainsbury's for 9 years myself, I know how much past history is used to, you know, to make some assumptions about, you know, the future and the next seasonal period. And of course, we don't have that from last year, right? Last year was, with no fault of anybody, but chaotic. And we've seen, haven't we, over the years that, you know, Christmas, in inverted commas, from a retail perspective, has got later and later, you know, people waiting for better offers, you know, all the way up to the sort of 23rd and Christmas Eve. Now, of course, with Black Friday and Cyber Monday and all of these things coming in as well, just the amount of demand and supply management these retailers, our customers, will be doing is just... it's just incredible. I take my hat off to them in terms of working out what will happen this year and how has the pandemic, you know, changed permanently people's shopping habits, you know, in this seasonal period. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. In terms of tips, you know, I think that the most important tip is that people should feel assured that any reputable retailer online is doing, and retail and reputable financial services entity, of which they all are, of course, because they're all regulated and you know, they're all licenses of ourselves or others, they should feel assured that those businesses are doing absolutely everything they can to protect themselves, to protect their customers and themselves. And so from that perspective, I think that should give many people, you know, the confidence to act and shop online safely over this Christmas period.
Thank you, Scott. So do you have anything to add there, Simon?
Yeah, thanks, Neera. I just wanted to touch on what Scott said earlier about, you know, what this period in time looks like. And I'd love to see stats from MasterCard after this period and just get to understand how different that pattern is, not only from last year, 2020, but what it looked like for 2019 and 2018 before that. As you said, it's kind of getting later and later, or closer and closer to Christmas. But I think there's also been an amount of fear-mongering relating to the supply chain, and this idea that if I don't place my orders now, I might not get the goods in time for Christmas. And I don't know if you can really wait that long. But as that excitement ramps up, as that fear kicks in, that's when I think criminals really latch on to trends and try to exploit customers. So I think the number one thing is really to make sure that you're transacting with a trusted and reputable brand as much as possible, especially when it's a big ticket item. But I think, you know, just along with that excitement, use the mechanisms of payment that you're comfortable with as well. We talked about lots of different options open for customers and different ways of checking out. And I think as you start moving away from the trusted means, like paying with your card, to alternative ways, be careful there as well for fraud and phishing. Because again, this is the mechanism that criminals use for distracting us and latching in onto that excitement. As Scott said, we're well protected. We go on a website, there is TLS, so the browsing session is secured, we're using our cards, they're tokenized. But what happens if we step away from that and start putting in our bank account details, for example, or being asked to transfer money from my bank account to your bank account? That's when, as a consumer, things start to get a little bit more risky. Because we're moving out of that controlled and trusted environment into something that doesn't necessarily have the protections that we expect. So I think the big piece of advice there is, of course, be careful, use the trusted brands. And if you do step away from that, be sure about what you're doing before you jump in with 2 feet.
I mean, that's great advice, Simon, isn't it? I mean, I think just that my parents are in their 80s, they must get they get a phone call at least every other day from somebody purporting to be somewhere that they owe them money urgently every other day. And I've seen stats around that there's the huge amount of increase in that type of phone call phishing behavior, etc. And you know, you owe money for this, or HMRC are chasing you for that. I think it's terrible behavior, but it's something that as many fraudsters know that many more people are at home more often, it's been something that's really taken off. And I did just want to say one other thing to what I said a second ago, Neera. We published some data, I think it was only last week, you know, we're predicting over 2020, we're predicting about an 8% growth in retail sales this Christmas. What is interesting, though, is that we, as I said earlier, that shift to digital, we think, is now, you know, cemented, and we're actually predicting about a 35 to 40% increase in digital sales over that same time period. So, you know, if you think about that and how low, therefore, the sort of face-to-face sales growth will be, we can really see the impact of the pandemic and people shifting their spending behaviours.
Absolutely. And indeed, new digital behaviours are definitely here to stay. So I know that MasterCard have been very active in that space. So can you tell us, Scott, what you're doing to address the evolution of payment fraud methods? Because criminals are becoming increasingly innovative.
I think I don't have time to think to talk about all of the different ways we're trying to do that, Neera. I wish I did, to some extent, and I wish I could remember them all to some extent. But you know, number one, of course, it is our joint number one thing. That there's a correlation between how much our products are used and how safe people feel whilst using our products. We've understand that correlation for a long time. And so we know that one, you know, how easy our products are to use must go hand in hand with how safe and secure people feel whilst using them. So our whole business strategy is focused on those two things. And I think there's a couple of things I would say on that. As I said a little earlier, you know, authorization is now hand in hand with authentication from a regulatory perspective here in Europe. But also we obviously see that as a trend, as a coming trend around the world. So our focus is on digital identification, investments in companies or purchasing companies that provide those types of solutions is something that is really important to us, both to offer to financial services operations, but also to retailers themselves. And also, of course, gateways and payment systems providers as payment services providers as well. So, you know, outside of digital ID, we've got lots of different things that we continue to do to help our customers manage, reduce and remove fraud. And one other thing I would say, as you no doubt will know or remember, we as a company bought Vocalink, which is a UK company that runs the Link ATM network and runs faster payments in the UK. We also have continued to invest in a significant amount of fraud tracking software, et cetera, in that business. And so we, particularly on this, the phishing things that Simon and I were just talking about, we're implementing things with banks and also with the FCA and the Bank of England to try and follow that money to see it actually where it eventually ends up, because that will obviously help law enforcement actually find out where this money is going.
And indeed as well, following the trend in cryptocurrency as well, there are lots of things that are being done in that respect as well, in terms of that tracking and transparency. So Simon, tell us, what are you doing?
Well, Neera, I think, you know, it goes back to me thinking about risk with customers. And so just to be sure about who I'm talking about. So when I talk about customers, Talis as customers, not us as citizens, as customers. But it's working with organizations to help them understand what new risks might exist. And especially as we start moving away from maybe the traditional mechanisms of payment, like cards and the big brands like MasterCard, is as I start looking at these new ways, what are the new risks that exist and understanding how to mitigate those. And I think that the thing that maybe organizations forget about to some degree is just because I move away from card payments doesn't necessarily mean that I move away from any of the problems or security issues that that exist with card payments. As Scott said, we've still got problems like authorization and identification, and in fact, they're intertwined now. We still have problems with sensitive data. We still have problems with access control. And so the old ways of protecting and all of the lessons really that we've learned across 30 or 40 years of card payments still absolutely apply. And I think that's the message I really try to get through to customers is don't forget about the controls and the things that you have in place to protect the card side of your business. It's use those same controls. And again, as Talis, we would get in trouble if we didn't say this kind of stuff, but use tools like encryption and strong key management to protect that data, to make sure that if you do have sensitive information, that it's not of any worth to a criminal should they breach your environment.
And all of this, of course, when we look at what you've both just been saying, all of this costs money, and the investment needs to be made, which is why security is actually often seen as a cost that businesses have to bear. And I know we've been talking for a long time that security should be looked at as a business opportunity. And I know MasterCard is doing that. So Scott, how is MasterCard actually not only talking the talk, but also walking the walk?
Well, I recognize that description you've given, Neera, but I think that's, for us anyway, that's a long time ago. You know, I think from our perspective, as I said earlier, the balance of making our product simple to use, but also making people feel like they're safe and secure, are hand in hand. And so, you know, the costs of doing things from a safety and security perspective are not just looked at in terms of the return in reducing fraud. I don't know many businesses that are currently just trying to make that business case work. The business case is really shop with me, spend with me, I'm going to look after you. And MasterCard can help you looking after you, as I say, by encryption, right? By particularly in tokenization, as I said, we're making huge efforts to tokenize every single card in the world, and we've got 2.9 billion accounts live globally. So that's a lot of work, but I do think we need to communicate that better, as I mentioned to Simon a little earlier. So I don't believe, and I meet very few businesses, both financial institutions or retailers, that see this very much as okay, my fraud is only this low, therefore, you know, I'm not going to invest in X, Y, and Z. This is much more about making customers, particularly that huge swathe of new customers that are relatively new to this through the pandemic, feel as safe and secure as businesses, as consumers that have used those tools and those payment methods for years.
Thanks, Scott. We could talk about this for ages and ages, but I'm afraid we're actually running out of time. So before I let you both go, Simon, do you have one last tip for our audience?
Yeah, thanks, Neera. And I just wanted to say thanks to Scott as well for coming on the podcast with us. This has been, you know, a great conversation. As Neera, you said, I think we could talk about this for ages. It's certainly an incredibly exciting time to be part of the payments industry, and very much something that keeps me motivated and you know, at my desk day after day. In terms of last bits of advice, I think, you know, two sides is really as us as consumers. As we've said, this is an exciting time coming up, or a busy time. It's easy to get caught up in that excitement, but also in the fear of missing out. Be careful when you're spending. Make sure that you're using reputable brands, and you know, look out for those visible indicators on websites to make sure that your transactions are secure, especially as you start moving more and more online.
Thank you, Simon. And what's your one last tip, Scott?
Well, I'd like to thank you, Neera, for the invite, and I'd like to thank Simon for also inviting me along. I really enjoy any opportunity to talk about what we're doing here at MasterCard. My tip is very basic. Take a breath before you do anything online. Just take one breath, maybe two, and just think for one beat or two beats around, you know, what you're doing. Is it with a reputable business? Are you doing something you've done often before and so you feel comfortable with it? You know, be assured that the likes of Thales and MasterCard are working every second of every minute of every day to make our customers, you know, feel as safe and secure as possible while shopping online or anywhere else. But just take a breath and take a thought every now and again. I think Simon just used a great phrase, that fear of missing out. There's a lot of that coming up, right, with the offers coming up this week on Black Friday and Cyber Monday. There'll be a huge amount of rush and pressure to do X or buy Y. Just take a second or two. I think that would, you might be really pleased that you did that in the long term.
Very wise advice from both of you. Thank you, Simon and Scott, for being fantastic guests. It's been a pleasure to host this podcast. You have been listening to this episode of the Thales Security Sessions podcast. Today, we've been talking about the future of payments with Simon Keats, Head of Strategy Payment Security at Thales, and Scott Abrahams, SVP Business Development and FinTech at MasterCard, hosted by me, Nera Jones. Thanks for listening.
Love this episode of the Thales Security Sessions podcast? Search us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast service to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Be sure to visit us at cpl.thalesgroup.com to access previous episodes, bringing you insights from industry experts on the latest cloud and data security news and trends. Thank you for listening.